You hate it? Is that something you hate from the hate song?
You know damn well it's in
no,
the
I
damn
hate. I know Katy Perry. Was it Katy Perry?
Katy Perry's in there. Wait, no, she's not. No, Katy Perry is Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift, yeah.
Cake is one of, like, the first things. So it's like, there's a list of the things that Jason hates. It's the main fucking first rhyme. pineapples and coffee, strawberries and cake.
Oh, yeah. I still get it.
Raisin cookies, Diet Coke and coffee, onions and Nick wafers, and 500 days of summer. Make that any...
You know, you
never send me that damn video.
I know you want the video. You know you don't need it. You can recreate it yourself.
Oh, I get lost in there on the third verse.
You guys got to be good. I'm recording.
I keep on trying to explain to people this fucking song, and they're like, look at me like I'm crazy. Like, no, there's a legitimate song and music video about the things that I said that I hated over the course of a year at a job.
Sure, Jason. Sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to blow smoke up someone's ass about me disliking Necco wafers. I don't know if we're going to use this as the whole intro, but...
No, we're not.
Hello and welcome to Adventures in Pod Taste, the AIPT Comics podcast. The man angrily yelling about the song that is about things he hates is me. I'm Jason. I'll be your host here for the AIPT Comics podcast, Adventures in Pod Taste. Thank you for joining us. Joined with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Dave Hildebrand. Say hi, Dave.
What's going on, everybody?
And
I'm not yelling about Taylor Swift or whatever the hell that was.
The guy yelling at about Taylor Swift at is your features editor at AIPT Comics, Chris Hassan. Say hi, Chris.
I'm actually the editor at large. So.
I'm not
because I like Taylor Swift.
yeah, because you've woken the beast. You've angered me by not sending me the video of my hate song. How are you, gents, doing outside of that conversation?
Fine. Good.
Riveting. This is going to be a great show.
He's had cake. He's good to go.
It's true. I pregame with cake.
Yeah. What kind of cake, though? Was it funfetti cake?
No, it was a lemon cream cake.
Mm.
You know what? I expect that from you. Chris isn't like the chocolate guy or anything. He's got to have something... like sophisticated, where he eats it and he has his pinky up as he puts a fork to his mouth.
I don't think that there's a fork involved.
What
I think that he probably has individual cake pieces with toothpicks in them. Really, toothpicks, like the kind that you get in a club sandwich.
I could see that, and then people are visiting him at his house, and they're like, "He's like, no, don't touch cake in the fridge. That's my pre-podcast cake.
That's the good cake. You guys can have the other cake.
You can have the little Debbie's in the fucking cabinet." Yeah,
he's got like four unopened ding-dongs sitting on the coffee table.
Three of them are expired. Good luck choosing which one is good.
You're such a crappy host, Chris. Come on.
Sorry, guys. What are we doing here? What are we talking about?
I thought you were going to share your cake recipe.
So yeah, today... Well, here's the thing. Today's episode is not actually about cake, as much as that's a fun topic. Today, we are going to right a wrong. We're going to put to bed someone's ignorance on the topic. Tonight's the night where Chris, who used to be, I believe, the only person on the site editing X-Men books, and myself, the guy who took over the worst X-Men books in the editing or the reviewing process, to finally introduce Dave to the wondrous world of mutants. That's right. It's the This Is Your Life, Dave. Welcome to the X-Men. Hope you survive the experience episode.
There will be cake.
There will not be cake. I am not a cake guy. It's fundamentally on the hate list. But that's right. Our co-host, Dave Hildebrand here, has never been a big X-Men fan. Is that right, Dave?
That is correct. As we talked beforehand, I've never been a big team comic book guy. Like I said, it's stupid sounding coming from me since what my favorites is Guardians of the Galaxy. But outside of them, I don't read X-Men, X-Force, X whatever.
I like the pretty good.
What's that?
Yeah, X whatever was fantastic.
X whatever is pretty good. But no, I've been, you know, I like Punisher, Ghost Rider, the single characters.
You know, you're
all that baggage, you know, with Colossus and shit.
You know who you sound like right now, Dave? You sound like Wolverine, who didn't think he was a team player. And over time, he found a family in the X-Men. So I think by the end of the show, you're going to find you love the X-Men.
I mean, to be fair, he was on, like, every fucking team. He was a member of the Fantastic Four. He's an Avenger.
Wolverine?
He's the Defenders. Yeah, Wolverine. Well, is
yeah, but when he first joined the X-Men...
He was in Power Pack, man.
Yeah, but that shows how much the X-Men showed him, how much he loves teams. So the X-Men are good for Dave, and Dave's going to come out of this loving everything.
Well, see, he's just a natural... I'm familiar the most with Wolverine because, you know, there was a time where he was jammed into every damn book. You know, he's had his... But fights with everybody I mentioned. I mean, him and Punisher. I'm trying to think if he's ever clashed with Ghost Rider, though.
There was an X-Men and Ghost Rider arc, but there was also an arc that was your three favorites right there in a row. It was Wolverine teaming up with the Punisher, teaming up with Ghost Rider. I think Daniel Ketch Ghost Rider. It was called Sons of Darkness or something like that.
Oh, yes.
Hearts of Darkness.
Hearts of Darkness, yep.
And they fought Blackout. And I remember that because that was how I knew who Blackout was when that Marvel game was released and he was a character.
The son of Mephisto, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And he was played by Wes Bentley in the shitty Ghost Rider movie.
He looked nothing like comics.
Nothing like... He didn't even look fucking intimidating. He was just like... He turned purple at one point and had like a bad CGI mouth, and that was the most like demonic.
Could he not breathe? Why did he turn purple?
He just happened to walk on the set one day and got the job.
But, as far as X-Men goes, obviously Wolverine is you call him the Cadillac of X-Men. Unfortunately, for better or worse, he's pretty much ubiquitous with the title. He's got the big X belt buckle. There's little getting around that he's the most popular one. But, Chris, as an avid X fan, and I think I know what your answer to this is, and it's going to be contentious. Mm-hmm. Who do you think is the greatest X-Man?
Oh, shit. We want to start with this, really?
No,
might as well.
It's Maggot.
Yes, Maggot. Maggot, aka Japhet, was a.
You know, Dave? Do you know Maggot?
No. See, like you said, Jason, Wolverine's a Cadillac.
Can you describe his powers, Jason?
I was midway through my introduction to Maggot. Maggot is a South African mutant by the name of Japhet, who has the, I guess you would call it, power of a external. Digestion system in the form of two like biomechanical slugs named Eenie and Meenie that will like swarm over him, but they're like kind of like Matter Eater Lad from the Legion of Superheroes, and that they can devour any item or any material and use that for fuel. He, when his maggots, as you would call them, would devour something, would gain super strength, invulnerability, and turn blue for some reason. He was widely considered to be the worst designed and conceived X-Man, but I feel like I'm trying to think of an X-Man that I think is worse. Besides that one guy who was the star of that like so and so the worst X-Man. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he was made to be the worst. So
yeah, wasn't his power that he could blow up?
Yeah,
one time because then he'd be blown up.
Actually, that was a pretty good series, actually. I reviewed the first issue, and they actually quoted me on the trade. So I'm not just saying that because my quote's on the trade, but I actually enjoyed that issue, that series. Maggot came out around the time of, like, Marrow 2. There was, like, a whole string of, like, lackluster X-Men. It was Marrow and it was Cecilia Reese or something, the Doctor.
I can get behind Cecilia Reyes. As a plot device, she's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, she's like their go-to doctor when Beast is off.
Well, and I think she's like, if memory serves, she might be the only Latina X-Man.
I'm not sure.
I guess arguably Feral was, but she was a fucking cat person and was never an actual X-Man.
You know what annoys me about the characters like Cecilia, who they created, is how current writers like Guggenheim will just like kind of stuff them in the issues. And they're not getting any character development, but they're just like, oh, here's this guy, and here's this like young X-Men character from a couple years ago, and like they're just there, you know, they're in the background.
You don't feel like Ink is getting his just due in X-Men Gold?
Oh, I'm just confused of what his powers are.
He has no fucking powers! So, yeah, Dave, here's another fun one for you. Ink is a non-mutant member of the X-Men who... He has a friend who actually has mutant powers, and his friend is a tattoo artist, and his power is that anything he draws on them gives someone power. So, like, he drew, like, a Colossus's skin stuff on his hand, so now he can punch really hard with that hand. And, like, over his eye, he had, like, the Phoenix symbol, so he was able to bring somebody back from the dead one time. Like, he's got, like, little wings on his back so he can fly. It's that kind of stupid shit. But
it,
like,
sounds like they ripped off that Tales from the Crypt episode.
There's a Tales from the Crypt episode like that?
I'm pretty sure it's Tales from the Crypt, where the guy gets tattooed and the tattoo, like, comes to life on him. It's a dragon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, not exactly,
like, powers-wise, but right, the way you started describing it, that's the first thing I thought. So,
well, that's sort of like when you played, I think it was maybe Super Street Fighter 2, after you won with Vega, his snake tattoo would, like, come alive and, like, snap at the screen. It's kind of cool.
So, well, I think that by talking about Maggot and then Ink, we've turned off Dave before we even get into this discussion.
Well, I was going to say, I'm catching up here. I looked up Maggot, and I found a picture with him. It looks like he wears those M-frame Oakley sunglasses like I do.
Well, he also sometimes would wear, like...
Cool, or maybe I should stop wearing these glasses.
Well, he would also wear, like, I want to say welder's goggles for a little bit. Or, like, the Dwayne Wade shades that flip up. Like, I seem to remember him having circular lenses at some point. But then again, now that I think about it, so did Strong Guy. He always wore those circular glasses for some reason.
Yep, because if you're tuning in for an X-Men podcast, you want to hear about Maggot and Strong Guy's fact.
We're going through all the awesomest X-Men.
Well, I was going to say, Ink looks like Mr. Clean with an X-Men outfit on.
Let's talk about Indra. He's purple and he gets kind of shitty skin armor.
Yeah, I don't know that guy's deal. I'm going to try to course correct here. So I'm sorry I made the joke about Maggot. My favorite X-Man is Cyclops. And I think, Dave, you already hate Cyclops based on what I know of you. But what is your take on Cyclops?
I mean, he's not my favorite. He comes across, like, you know, like I said, I don't read a whole lot of him, but just going by what I've seen, you know, he's like that jealous boyfriend type, right?
is he not?
I mean, he's he tries to lead the, you know, he leads the X-Men and whatnot. I don't know. He gives off that smug vibe to me.
The smugness is probably fair. I would say that the jealous boyfriend thing is purely an affectation of the movie Cyclops, which is worst Cyclops.
Yeah.
Movie Cyclops is a total, like, dork who, like, is basically getting pantsed by Wolverine the entire movie. Like, there's no redeeming quality to James Marsden's portrayal of him. Which I don't think that James Marsden's, like, a bad actor or anything like that. I think that there was no interest in making Cyclops a cool character in that movie. He's just the wiener in charge, basically.
Yeah, I think Cyclops took the biggest hit for our generation from the cartoon series, which is, I think, a lot of people spent a lot of time getting to know the X-Men through the cartoon in the 90s, and, you know, that's what you think of when you think of the X-Men aside from the movies. And on that show, Cyclops was this, the dorky, straight-laced leader type who, you know, Wolverine and Gambit were always given a hard time. So, you know.
And he always ended up screaming his wife's name.
Yeah, Jean was probably the lamest of the characters. They really butchered Jean on that show, which is funny because you see how, like, beloved she is in the comics now, how, like, powerful she is. And they just put her in the background, basically. So, and also very odd that she had that ponytail when she never had that in the comics.
Yeah, I thought that was also, like, the worst costume that they could have stuck her in. Like, what's the function of that fucking suit? Plus, it was a weird time, too, because I feel like maybe it was due to, like, exercise equipment in, like, Lycra back in the day. But a lot of, like, the ex-women that were in those, like, form-fitting bodysuits had, like, thongs drawn onto the outside of the outfit. Like, what was the value of that?
Yeah, and shoulder pads, too.
And the huge ass shoulder pads that were like fucking linebacker pads and went a foot all over their shoulder.
Were you gonna say something, Dave?
What's that?
Were you gonna say something?
Oh, no, I'm just listening to what you guys are saying.
We're talking about shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads and thongs, and I was just curious to see where this is going to lead to next.
We love X fashion. What I think is so appealing about Cyclops is I think that, you know, he's... Can you hear me, guys? Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So I think it's kind of like wish fulfillment for a lot of, you know, comic fans growing up, you know, because Cyclops started out as like the shy kid on the team. He has this incredible power where if he looks at you without those glasses or his visor, he's going to kill you. You know, he's got that power coming out of his eyes at all times. So he kind of is forced to be reserved. He's forced to constantly be in control and can't really enjoy his life. You know, so he's always kind of looking at the other guys. You know, Angel is a billionaire, Playboy, Beast is the smartest guy on the team, Iceman's the funniest, and then there's Jean, who's like this beautiful girl on the team. And you know, you grow up, you fall for the girl in class, whatever. And if you're a shy comic nerd, you know, you're not going to be able to get near the coolest girl in class. But Cyclops, she fell for Cyclops because she's also a telepath, so she can read his mind. And Cyclops through history has like attracted all the most powerful telepaths. It's like his girlfriends. So like obviously there's something deep there. This guy's got a lot going on. Professor X chose him to lead the X-Men. He's entrusting him. All the X-Men follow his lead. They look up to him. So like it's just that's cool to me. Like that's he's in charge of everybody. And through the years, he's continuously, you know, when the mutant race was almost wiped out, like he led them and, you know, took proactive action to make sure the mutant race survived. And he went after enemies ahead of time and before they could get the mutants. And recently he became, before he died in the comics, he became like a rebellious, the revolutionary type, leading the mutants to safety and everything. So I think he's always been an interesting character. He's always been a character people can look up to. That's my take on him.
See, I'm also a Cyclops apologist, but mostly for that latter stage where he started to go bad. I think that once Jean died again and he and Emma became a thing, he became a much more interesting character. He became a lot more resolute and like commanding as a presence. Even friggin' Wolverine mentions that in, I forget what arc that was. It might have been Deadly Genesis. It might have been... Second Coming or something like that, but he was genuinely impressed with Cyclops stepping up and taking things on. And I thought that was kind of cool. Plus his whole stint as like a quote-unquote mutant terrorist was interesting. Mm-hmm. I really did like Wolverine and the X-Men as a series, but I think that I preferred when Cyclops took his kids to like the Weapon X facility and started training his school. With gold balls and the other lame X-Men, like what are they calling him? I guess they're calling him Morph now.
There's a bunch of characters we never saw again.
Yeah,
and we'll never see again.
And Tempest, she was really cool and like was Aussie and wore that cute little short skirt, and then she just fucking like threatened to kill Cyclops and disappeared.
Yeah, that was interesting.
So, what book is Cyclops in now?
He's
There's
dead.
What? X-Men Gold, X-Men Blue, there's what?
He's dead.
He was too cool.
Unless you count what his appearances in Phoenix as canonical, which I don't think that that's actually Cyclops. He's dead.
Yeah, so
how long has he been dead?
Like a year or two?
Yeah, a year or two. So there was
How did he die?
The
you know,
Inhuman.
It's funny because, you know, I review books with you guys and everything. You would think I would know, even though I don't follow X-Men, that this cat's dead, but I guess not.
Well, so ironically, with the Fox and Marvel Studios war there over the X-Men and everything, so Marvel Studios started to push the Inhumans over the X-Men in the comics. So that meant that in the recent Marvel relaunches, the Inhumans were given more of a spotlight and they became like the dominant force, whereas mutants were kind of pushed aside. And they did that through, I guess, when Black Bolt released the Terrigen Mists in the air, that those, it turns out, were harmful to mutants. And so then this thing called Mpox developed, and Cyclops was one of the first casualties of Mpox. So he just was knocked out with this mutant Inhuman plague thing.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Inhumans somewhat. I started reading the Uncanny Avengers when it first came out, but I think I got through two arcs of that, then I jumped ship on it. I don't care for the Inhumans and all that mist shit and everything, so Which sucks, because I like Deadpool, of course, and I like Rogue, and then Cable showed up, so... I mean, some of it was interesting, but like I said, I can't get behind the whole Inhumans thing.
Oh, you mean the most recent run of Uncanny Avengers?
Yeah, the recent one of... Yeah, what came out a year and a half ago.
It's like that first arc was where they fought the Red Skull with Professor X's brain.
Yes.
Which is also pretty X-Men related there.
Yeah, well, I mean, two things there. That Cyclops killed Professor X, and that's, you know, so he killed him. Cyclops got the power of the Phoenix, went crazy, killed Professor X. The Red Skull then got Professor X's brain, right, Jason?
Mm-hmm.
Took the brain, put it in his brain, now he's powerful. And the other thing is Cable is Cyclops' son. I don't know if you know that, Dave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, I mean, Cable's like the ultimate badass, so if your
he's
father...
He's the son of Cyclops and a clone of Jean Grey by the name of Madeline Pryor, who was infected with that techno-organic shit on his body by Apocalypse when he was a baby, sent into the future where they didn't really have a cure, but they could kind of stop it, and now he's back as a, like, cyborg badass old man.
Huh. No, what's funny... is as we're talking about this and we're getting like we're only like 20 minutes in this discussion, we've raised so many issues with the X-Men lore that like make turn people off the X-Men. It's like, oh, we've got the clone of Jean Grey, we've got the future son, and we got all this weird stuff, and it's easy to see why
Cable is the son of Cyclops. I now hate Cable. No,
is that the transitive property?
I didn't give you shit. See, for all you listeners out there, we all talk a lot off air, and you know, we communicate through the week. I mean, that's what we do. And a lot of us give Chris a hard time about Cyclops, so it's only fair that I give him shit here. So,
see, and I'm also on team hashtag right Clops, so I can't really take too much part in this bad mouthing of Scott Summers. I won't defend him all the way, but I think he's a pretty okay character. Plus, as a kid, my favorite character was Gambit, who is far more indefensible, is probably much lamer. I don't agree with that concept. My whole thing was, that's a dude who can do all sorts of flippy ninja shit. He can charge anything to make it into a grenade. And he's got like a hypnotic charm that only after I turned like 20 did I realize it's kind of rapey. Yeah, so dig this part of his power set. He has maybe we don't like the X-Men. Maybe it's much more fun to rag on them. but this part of his power set is that he has a hypnotic charm that when he talks to you, he can subtly influence the way that you're going to like feel about something or make you approach something the way that he's trying to get you to look at. The thing is, it only works if you don't know he has it. So, literally anybody who reads a bio that's like, has magnetic charm, oh, it's like, well, now he doesn't. Like,
I didn't know he had that, so he could have gotten me to do anything.
See that? You didn't read the back of those X-Men cards.
You know what? Now this is why mutants are a menace. I understand now.
I was going to say, did y'all ever play, it's an older game too, it's a card game called Overpower?
Oh, the card game.
I think one of the cards.
Those, yeah.
Because I never used Gambit, and I think one of the cards was like that stare or that hypnotic trance or some shit like that. Now that you say it, I think I remember seeing that.
Mm-hmm.
You think Gambit could, now that we have all the electronic devices, could he charge them if he did it quick enough? Like he didn't blow.
You mean, can he charge the battery?
Can he charge my phone? Is what I'm asking.
He's responsible for all those Samsung phones blowing up.
Yeah, he made the Galaxy.
He has stock in Apple, so he made the Samsung phones blow up.
That's just being a smart businessman, Petit. That's how my boy Remy does it.
My first introduction to Gambit, I believe, was that big-ass X-Men stand-up arcade game from way back.
Oh, yeah. That was a great game. Wait,
which one? Gambit wasn't in... The only game that Gambit has been in the arcade was X-Men versus Street Fighter.
No, I think it was in one of the side-scrollers.
No. The side-scroller was based off of the old failed TV pilot Pride of the X-Men and featured a cast Cyclops, Wolverine, Colossus, Storm, Nightcrawler, and Dazzler. For no Gambit. Because she was in the show.
You're talking about there's an SNES game, Dave, with Gambit, Psylocke, Beast, Wolverine, and Cyclops.
There is a Capcom game that does that. Something. It's called X-Men Apocalypse Agenda, I think. And then there's another one that he's a part of, which is Spider-Man and the X-Men, where the X-Men team that you get to play as is Gambit, Wolverine, Cyclops, and Storm. And so you can play as Spider-Man. Then, we're going way off topic here, but I'm into this at this moment. Then with the Sega Genesis, Gambit was a member of both the X-Men and X-Men 2 teams, and those games were awesome. They had a really good like soundtrack, and it had a really tricky control structure, and there was one stage where you fight fucking Mojo, which he's awful. Nobody likes Mojo. But everybody especially hates Mojo because at the end of the game, of that stage, it says something like, there's a disk error, reset your game. But the trick is, you have to soft reset or else you lose your whole game. If you soft reset, like if you just like kind of tap it, then it'll go to the next level and you beat Mojo or whatever. But if you hold it down too long, it erases your whole game and you have to fucking start over.
Sounds like the most horrible thing ever.
Yeah, it was a total dick
move. Again, not helping people like the X-Men.
Mojo is the worst. And it's especially shitty if you try to play the game on like an emulator, or there was this thing called the Nomad, which was like a portable Genesis that came out. It didn't have a reset button, so you couldn't get past that stage. It's kind of fucked.
All right, I looked it up, and it is X-Men Mutant Apocalypse is the game I'm talking about. So
it's called Mutant Apocalypse, not Apocalypse Agenda?
Yeah, that sounds all right. It should be.
It says two X-Men Mutant Apocalypse. I'm looking at Gambit right here. It's for Super Nintendo.
Yeah, man, you do the Hadouken, and he throws a card.
Yep, so I stand corrected. It wasn't the big monstrosity arcade game.
Actually, you don't even do a Hadouken. I think you just double tap forward and punch, and he throws a card. You can do it in any direction.
Yeah, that's the easy days where you just press a button.
If you want to fight Apocalypse, you want to throw cards at him. That's the way to stop him.
I don't remember fighting Apocalypse in that game. I don't think I ever beat that game, but I remember. I definitely got it for like a Christmas one year.
I remember it was a lot of like Genosha guys, like this random soldier.
Yeah, yeah. Which actually brings up a fun point. If we are trying to get someone into the X-Men,
turn off this podcast.
what storylines do we think are good for somebody coming in?
You know, I was thinking about this before I got on, and it's so hard because like I think with a lot of X-Men stories, probably like with a lot of comic stories, it's like the Citizen Kane effect, where you grow up your entire life hearing Citizen Kane is the greatest movie of all time. So when you watch it, you're like, yeah, I guess this is great. Because you don't want to be the guy who's like, stupid, overrated, you know. But that's how I feel about a lot of the X-Men stories. I'm thinking about them because I'm like, Days of Future Past, Dark Phoenix Saga, God Love Man Kills, all these stories, I read them after I heard I have to like read these stories because they're the greatest, you know. How do you feel about that, Jason?
That's probably fair, but that's because most of them came out in the damn 80s. Mm-hmm. And
damn those 80s.
Yeah, the damn 80s. we also came out of the 80s, so, you know, there's that. But
80s got us there.
But the, I don't know, I think that there are still some strong outings out there. As we were discussing before the show, the Jim Lee years, I think, were good years to be X-Men. Were these series perfect? No, absolutely not. I mean, Days of Future Past gets a large pass because it's realistically, it's two issues. It's a really short, like, read. And even that is all kinds of fucking wonky, and you need to be, like, up on at 70s X-Men lore for it to make any sense. That's my problem here.
I was thinking about, like, if I give Dave the Dark Phoenix Saga, or if I give him, you know, Days of Future Past, there's so much other stuff in there because it's like this one long continuing saga that I don't know if Dave could, like, if you gave Dave the first omnibus of the Byrne, Claremont, Cockermeers, like that's where all the main X-Men stuff comes from. So it's like But would Dave enjoy it? You know, would there?
I don't know that it's necessary to go that far back. And realistically, I haven't enjoyed a lot of Claremont's run. If I'm completely honest, there are bits that I like. They just tend to overlap with the Jim Lee years. Mm-hmm. You know what? I'll go as recently as Second Coming. I think is a pretty good storyline that doesn't have a particularly high barrier of entry, because they kind of spell it out for you in the beginning. Mutants are almost dead. They all live on this island. And then this one girl is the first mutant born. And now they got to figure out like how to keep her from the sentinels that are trying to kill her. Boom. Mm-hmm. Simple enough concept. So many cool scenes. A lot of great action. The art is almost uniquely good, like ubiquitously good. There's stakes. There's characters that die. There's changes that happen. There's
by the way, all those characters have since come back.
Yeah, one of them can't die anymore.
I think, though, like a lot of the modern Marvel event series, they're all kind of built that way, to stand alone, especially stuff like Civil War and Secret Invasion and stuff.
Yeah, but Second Coming built off of Messiah Complex, Messiah War. Like, it built off of a couple of other things.
Well, maybe a good thing to do is recommend, like, runs. You think, like, something like Astonishing X-Men by Whedon, Joss Whedon. I feel like that was built as kind of an entry point for newer fans.
Sure.
So that could be a good run to read for a new X fan. Although I was never a fan of that alien villain. What was his name? Ord. Yeah.
From Breakworld?
Yeah, that was weird.
That was, I don't know. Joss Whedon gets a weird level of like hype for people. Mm-hmm. And honestly, and this is probably going to like hate make a lot of people who actually do listen to the podcast hate us. I've never been a huge Buffy guy. I don't really like, I saw a couple episodes and thought it was okay. I don't know that I think that his contribution to the Avengers movie were what made it as good as it was, because I've seen other things that he's done. Well, because I've seen other things that he's done. I haven't seen Justice League, but I haven't really appreciated like what I think of as Joss Whedon stuff. Mm-hmm. As much as others. And so I read that series well after the fact, and I watched the motion comic and everything, and I didn't think it was all that good. Like, it's fine. Like, but yeah, Ord is a stupid character. I mean, there's a little getting around the feeling that the entire arc was built to bring Colossus back.
Yeah.
I'm not a huge fan of the Astonishing team. Like, Armor is fine, but she's just, you know, Kitty Pryde 3, I guess, at this point. Like, we already had her, we had Jubilee, then we had Armor briefly. I feel like they tried to do it with Pixie for a little while.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like every writer wants to have their own Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, and that's lame. Like, you know, somebody at friggin' the offices of Marvel should be like, hey, you know what? Let's not do the same fucking story that we've been doing for the past 30 years, but here we are with X-Men Gold literally doing the same stories that we've been doing for the past 30 years.
I think maybe a good thing to do is, Dave, like, what do you look for in a story? Like, what kind of stories appeal to you? And there's probably an X-Men story that fits that framework.
Well, I was going to ask, I'll answer your question, then I'll ask you mine. I've always, as far as the X-Men go, I've always liked Gambit. So, I don't know, is there a decent... Is there a decent arc with him?
No.
No? That's it? Okay.
You piece of shit! No. If I'm real, it's not a great arc overall, but I enjoyed the Trial of Gambit that was drawn by, I think, Roger Cruz.
Moderera, however you say his name.
Was
right?
That Jeff Moderera still?
He did like a big anniversary. I mean, there was like a foil cover I got for whatever. Yeah.
X-Men 350. I think that's 350.
Yeah, probably.
I enjoyed that one, but I'm a huge Joe Moderera guy. Honestly, I think if Gambit got shine anywhere outside of the cartoon or his own solo series, it was probably in the Age of Apocalypse. He was a pretty big fish there. He got to like take down some people that of renown. I won't spoil too much there. And he played a pretty important role in it, even if he was given the worst art team of the extra like X-Men books that they were putting out that time. Maybe that's not fair. You know what? The Universe X, where it was like all of the Avengers and mm-hmm. the Fantastic Four, that had the worst art.
Yeah. I heard the current Gambit and Rogue miniseries that launched last week, that's getting good buzz. I haven't read it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one issue in, though. It's kind of hard to go.
I think it's playing the hits to like the diehard Gambit Rogue fans from the 90s. So I think that's why people like it so much.
Hey, I'm one of them. Sugar
should have reviewed it. I think Eric reviewed it.
I think Eric reviewed it too. I don't know. I'm interested in the book, but I have no illusion of it being great. Gambit is a character that wasn't really popular with a lot of creative teams, it feels like.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, creators like Grant Morrison, you know, came in, like, they had no interest in Gambit, so they didn't really use them. But I think Gambit, I mean, he suffered from, in the 90s, he was just kind of there on the team, and he was doing his thief stuff with the Thieves Guild. That was like his subplot, and that woman who he was either, was he married to her or something?
Belladonna Boudreaux. Yeah.
Like, it's very hazy, like his whole background. But
shut your damn mouth. You know exactly what this is. There was that X-Men cartoon episode about it and everything.
Yeah, yeah. And
he was betrothed to Belladonna Boudreaux of the Assassin's Guild, but he being of the Thieves Guild. Man, you know this damn story.
I do. But then, like, after the 90s, like, he kind of became, like, they tied him into Mr. Sinister, and how, like, so Dave, in the 80s, the Mutant Massacre was, like, this infamous storyline where the Marauders, led by Sabretooth, went and, like, slaughtered all the Morlocks, which are the mutants who live in the sewers, because they're not pretty enough like the X-Men. Right. So that was a big thing where, like, they slaughtered all these innocent mutants, and then in the 90s, it was revealed that Gambit was the guy who told them where to go kill these mutants.
Well, he led them into the tunnels and then found them. But you find out in the trial of Gambit aforementioned that he didn't know that it was going to be to like murder a bunch of people. Yeah. And then when that happened, he tried to stop it. He got sideswiped by Sabretooth, who, let's be real, is going to eat Gambit's lunch most of the time. And then rescued the aforementioned Marrow and got the fuck out of there.
So I feel like that was like the first bad thing that happened to Gambit's character. And then it kind of, from there we did he just seems kind of pathetic to me. Like his recent characterization, it's like when they became an Apocalypse's horseman for a while, which is really weird. And like he was just really lost at that point. And I think after that, writers like didn't know what to do with him. And like ever since, he's just been climbing out of this hole. And I don't know why he keeps coming back to the X-Men, because even in the Gold arc, like he was just stealing some shit. Like he shows up in a book, he's just stealing something, and it's like, is this what you do now, Gambit? This is your life? Like, what happened to you? He used to be part of the X-Men. What's going on?
I mean, do you think the X-Men pay well? Is that like a good lifestyle to be a part of?
Although he's going to be in Jean Grey's book, X-Men Red. So interesting what he's doing there with that motley crew of characters.
Book looks terrible. But yeah, if you're going to look for a cool Gambit moment, what was the Genosha one? Was that Extinction Agenda? Extinction Agenda is where he gets to have his like big shine moment before Age of Apocalypse made him awesome. His whole story, there's this island of Genosha that hates mutants and has passed like apartheid rule against mutants, and it's worse than that because they're actually like brainwashing them into slaves and like, you know, torturing them. That part's sort of like apartheid, but anyway, the X-Men get captured and they're in like whatever bullshit science means that they lose their powers. So in order to get away, Gambit gets Cable gets into a fight with this guy Cameron Hodge, who's running the country, and ends up like getting shot at by Cameron Hodge with like this weird like metal spiky gun, and Gambit jumps in the way and purposefully takes a spike in the leg and acts like it's like legit or whatever, and Cameron Hodge leaves it in there because he's like, fuck that guy, hope he loses his leg. But what does Gambit do? He manages to lift, like, to do a full-on, like, 120-degree crunch, pull the damn thing out with his teeth, drop it into his feet, then lift his feet above his head to undo his restraints, and then let every other mutant free. Purposefully took a damn shot in the leg to let the X-Men go. And that was pretty much it for what he did of import in that entire arc. But I was appreciative of that moment of shine for Gambit. That was his coolest feat, I would probably guess.
That sounds pretty cool. Mutant Extinction?
Extinction Agenda.
With an X. Extinction Agenda. Okay.
With an X, yeah. The rule of thumb. Well, the rule of thumb whenever they name X-Men events is that there's always going to be an X in some way or shape, and it's always going to be ostentatious. Yeah, Messiah Complex.
Executioner song.
Well, Dave, you seem to also like you like the gruff loner stuff, as what I've gathered from your fandom of the Punisher and Ghost Rider. Chris, what would you recommend to a loner type who might be interested to get into the X-Men?
Well, you know, it seems like we're going in a Wolverine direction. I mean, what counts as an X-Men story? Because a lot of the X-Men have had solo series, Wolverine being the most prominent. So could you recommend like a Jason Aaron run on Wolverine to Dave? Would that be considered an X-Men story, or is that a Wolverine story?
That's a fair point. I guess you can't really recommend a team book to someone who likes solo stuff. But there are great solo arcs from an X-Men book. I would say anything that happened within the X-Men series. You know what? I've got just the one. In the Dark Phoenix saga, this is something that came up the other day when we were talking about the Wolverine versus Cyclops debate. Where in this saga, if you haven't seen the cartoon, Jean Grey gets possessed by this giant space god thing that takes the space of a fiery bird called the Phoenix, and it inhabits her, and sometimes it is in control and it's fucking crazy and it wants to destroy everything, and sometimes she's in control and she's just kind of blah and it's not as good. And one of those times, she gets her world rocked by this bad guy named Mastermind, who has the ability to create illusions, and he makes her fall in love with him and think that she's like in Victorian England and blah blah blah, and the X-Men go in to rescue her and get the shit kicked out of them by the Hellfire Club, is made up of a couple of mutants. One of them is this guy Harry Leland, who can control did we decide that it was gravity or it was mass? I think we said mass.
I think it's mass, yeah.
He can handle the mass of anything. And so Wolverine is the only one, his last man standing for the X-Men. And he's coming after this dude. And Leland sees this. He just keeps on, like, making him heavier and heavier, like, trying to slow him down. And just, like, this several-panel stretch of Wolverine's, like, just, like, trudging towards him, like, trying to stab this fat bastard. And right as he gets, like, within striking distance, he just... it's too much. He collapses through like five different floors and into the sewer and gets like presumably swept away. And you think that that's it. Like there's like an issue or two that goes before you even see what happens to Wolverine, which is him popping up at the end of the issue and looking like pissed off. And like, I think it was supposed to be blood, but it got colored like it was water coming out of his mouth. And he's like, all right, suckers, you tried your best. Now's my turn. And he goes off on this fucking Terminator spree of killing all the goons in the Hellfire Club en route to rescuing Jean and the X-Men. It's a one issue of that whole arc, but it's the cool loner Terminator thing that I can think of when I think of the X-Men.
I think it's a good example because, I mean, like, what's so great about the X-Men is, like, the characters. Like, there's so many X-Men that you... it's hard not to find a character you relate to in the team or something that you think is awesome. The thing is similar to that. There's a, I think it was X-Men 150, Uncanny X-Men 150, where Cyclops is getting married to the Jean clone, but that issue, I think it's Mastermind he fights, where like Mastermind makes everyone think the Dark Phoenix has returned, or Madeline's a Dark Phoenix or something. And they think Cyclops is Dark Phoenix. That's what it was. So the X-Men see Cyclops as Dark Phoenix, and they're all fighting him. And the whole issue is Cyclops just dismantling the entire team. And like that's something that shows. I mean, you just gave a Wolverine example. I'm giving a Cyclops example of how he can. He's such a great leader and such a great strategist that he can take down his entire team. And so, I mean, there are a lot of moments like that within the X-Men where I guess it was Claremont mostly that was like showing how each and every character how strong they are.
Yeah, I think it's a good enough sign. We'll take a brief respite from our fanboying to ask Dave any questions we can answer about the X-Men.
Yeah, I'm like taking notes and want to have to go back and listen to the podcast even after I edit it just to write down everything I need to catch up on. But what I was going to ask is I was at a convention a couple months ago, and I want to say this is either 1991 or 1992, where there was four different covers for issue number one.
Yeah, I think that was 92.
And they all
There was at least six. Yeah, I think there was at least six.
So, because they were in really good condition, I picked them up for $1 each. Because I just thought they were cool. You know, they had them all, they were connecting. And I'm pretty sure I've seen them before, but I jumped on it. But is that run decent to read or not?
I enjoyed it, and I looked it up. It's 91, and there are five variants.
There's five?
But there were five different covers. There's, like, shit. One that's
if I
got
all five. If not, I got to figure out which one I'm missing now.
Isn't that
you probably do.
That comic is, that's, like, still the number one selling comic of all time, right?
Yeah, it's like, the most popularly owned comic of all time because they sold so many different variant covers, and they sold them in packs. Like, I think that and X-Force number one,
I have all those
covers of, and I have them bagged. And then I have open versions. Like there's just so many. It's basically a worthless comic.
Yeah, they're all worthless, and they're all responsible for destroying the comic market in the 90s. So that kind of puts a bad taste in your mouth, Dave. Is this a good story?
That's all the covers, though. I mean, that's why I picked.
Yeah, those are the tail end of the Jim Lee years, and I think Jim Lee was probably the best artist on X-Men, even though I may prefer the runs that Joe Madureira worked on. But Jim Lee was Jim Lee's name obviously precedes him. His run on X-Men was great. He's part of the, I think he's probably the reason I like Gambit, because he made him look cool. He definitely contributed to Cyclops looking like a wiener because he kept him in undies.
But yeah, that time it was Jim Lee on X-Men and Liefeld on New Mutants and X-Force. And they kind of, through those X-Books, launched their Image careers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also a fan of Psylocke until I saw Olivia Munn destroy that character. But is Psylocke have any decent stories, or is she a big impact on any of them?
The X-Force run is great.
The Uncanny X-Force is a great book for everybody that's in it. It's the only book that I like Phantom X in. It's my favorite Deadpool story. It's my favorite Archangel story. That's a great run. Rick Remender on Uncanny X-Force. You'd really like that book, Dave, you would. I think about it.
Even the first arc of that Phantom X cliffhanger in the beginning.
And which one is this again?
It's called Uncanny X-Force, written by Rick Remender. Don't go for any of the later Uncanny X-Force books. They're uniformly shit. But
I don't want to give the spoiler, but it's like that final
with Evan.
That was awesome. I was like, man, that's a good book.
That was where I thought that he could be anything other than just a fucking waste of space Gambit clone with a French accent. That was like 2009, 2010.
Yeah,
it was long. Well, I guess that's pretty long ago now. But it was not that unrecent, which is not a word.
So just ignore Jason.
I liked the X-Force run before that too. And X-Force usually isn't a book that I enjoy. I didn't like when it was Cable's team, and then when Cable left and it became sort of just the dumping ground for the New Mutants characters that they couldn't put anywhere. That being said, almost to a T, I've enjoyed whenever a X-Force member ends up on the X-Men roster proper. Warpath, I think, is a great X-Man. I think he's a great addition. He's not involved nearly enough in regular X-Men stuff. Roberto Bobby DaCosta, a.k.a. Sunspot, is like one of the most important Avengers out there, according to an article I read on CBR over in U.S. Avengers. Dude owns AIM. Let me think. Who else is in that one?
Cannonball. Cannonball's in it.
Cannonball. I liked Cannonball as an X-Man. He didn't get a lot of shine. He was always kind of treated as like a loser. But I don't know. I liked Cannonball as an X-Man. I liked Domino as an X-Man. Speaking of Domino, we're talking about that series that she's got coming out. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it too.
I think Dave had an interesting angle he hopes to see in that one.
Yes, we need variant covers of Domino delivering dominoes.
Yeah, given her luck powers, I imagine she would always make it within the 30 minutes or before your pizza's free.
Good tip.
Yeah, she'd probably also get a very good tip. Plus, she's like, you know, hot, so that probably helps a lot.
She'd shoot you if you don't give her a good tip.
Yeah, well, she's also an expert assassin and can murder you.
What's that?
It's not going for her.
I mean, there has been worse variant covers out there. You know, this could happen.
Yeah, you know, but Domino as a character, that actually kind of brings into a nice little category of X-Men. I feel like the underrated X-Men.
Yeah.
Like, there were at one point something like 100, if you want to trust the series title, 198 mutants that mattered. So because of it, everybody has a favorite X-Man. Some people, it's the bland, the Wolverines, what have you. Those are, you can call them the casuals. But a lot of people, especially like in the later generations, with books like the newly relaunched New Mutants or Hellions or the new X-Men, there's a whole mess of characters out there that don't get a lot of love. They aren't in a ton of storylines, but are really well liked, really well like followed. Chris, who are your favorite Dark Horse X-Men? Your non-Astonishing Crew X-Men.
That is interesting. Well, I think Archangel's always had an amazing design.
Doesn't count, man. He's top tier. He's the original class.
See, but I think that there are characters like Iceman, Archangel, Iceman's obviously become more prominent, but like there are characters that you can tell writers like don't really know what to do with them. Like Angel. Archangel's been through so many changes in recent years. Like, he's never at the forefront of a book where they're like, I want to make an art. I mean, aside from Remender. But I mean, there are a lot of characters like Bishop. Bishop's a character that's gone through so many changes because like writers don't know what to
Bishop
do with
him. Sucks though. I don't like
Bishop. Is he still around?
He got the Gambit treatment where they drag him to the mud, and now he's like, what are we? His whole thing was like, he kidnap Hope, or he wanted to kill the baby.
He wanted to kill Hope. He chased Cable and Hope throughout time.
And like, his whole thing is he wants to kill a baby. And like, how do you come back from that? Now he's just on the team. It's like, why are we hanging out with this guy? We got Gambit and Bishop on the Astonishing Crew. And it's like, what's going on here? And Phantom X. So it's like a bunch of.
Yeah, but Xavier's in Phantom X's body, so hopefully he just becomes Xavier and we never have to hear freaking Phantom X again.
Wipes our memory of all these horrible plots. I don't know. Come back to me. Because I don't have a dark. I only care about.
There's that. Only two of us.
There's only Cyclops.
I can't say. Well, who am I going to choose?
See, I was a fan of a lot of the Young X-Men series. Personally, I'm upset that we didn't get more love for Hellion. Hellion is a young, really powerful telekinetic X-Man who like was so strong and like such a natural with his power that he was thought of like as hot. He thought he was hot shit and he was gonna be like the big fucking instant X-Man, but kept fucking up or getting injured or something would happen, and he was a total prick. But like, you get to see him become a real character after failing and like having shit happen to him. He was like a very interesting character to read. Plus, in I think I already mentioned Second Coming, which I recommend again. It's probably my favorite of the recent X-Men crossovers. He is put on the front line to help protect the city of San Francisco from these like Nimrod Sentinels, which are like super strong future Sentinels that are being sent back in an infinite wave every couple of minutes. And he uses his power to like disintegrate a Sentinel, but in the process of doing that, uses so much that he destroys his own fucking arms. And so he is like armless for a while, but then using his telekinesis starts to like manipulate like these gloves, like they're his actual hands. And it just becomes like a little quirk, like, oh, he's got no arms, but they're there, but they're just like psychic arms that he's got going on. In recent years, I feel like I've seen artists drawing more actual arms on there without like saying that like he's wearing prosthetics or something like that. But I've seen that in the background. I've not seen anything of this guy. He was supposed to be a big deal, and they had these great arcs where he had to like go through a lot of change and actually show development and growth, and they never did anything with him. Ditto with like characters like Surge. Surge was the leader of the Young X-Men. She's a Japanese girl who wore these gauntlets. Maybe it's just the gauntlets. Maybe that's why I like these characters.
You love gauntlets. There's a movie coming out with a villain has a gauntlet this summer. You should check it out.
I really haven't heard of that one. But anyway, she controls like electricity and, you know, finds out that her boyfriend is, I guess he's not gay, but he's bi and not interested in her. And like, she goes through a lot of things where she was Hellion's like prime, like, I guess you'd say foil. She was the good side. He was the bad side. She was kind of also at the top of the class and everyone thought she was hot shit. But she as leader also fucks up at the beginning in this arc and gets like Hellion almost gets killed and X-23 gets really injured. But of course she's X-23, so she's able to get through it no problem. And so it really like traumatizes her and she has like learned to become a functioning member of the team again. And I thought that that was a really cool story that gives a lot of things to build off of with that character. And they've just done nothing with her. She's been in the background of books since then. And it sucks. Like, I like these characters. I'd like to see them get more shine.
Yeah, well, I mean, you bring up a good point, which is on these runs on these books that don't get a lot of love, like, they're doing really interesting things. And once those creators leave, those characters get pushed to the background, and then Guggenheim scoops them up and throws them in the background. But this reminded me of Glob Herman and Anoli. They were really great in Jeff Lemire's Extraordinary X-Men, which I think was kind of like an underrated X-Men book. And Lemire, I think, based on what I've seen in interviews, like, he kind of left Marvel with a bad taste in his mouth because of like editorial mandates and all that. And obviously he was working with that whole Inhumans plot. But there's a lot of really interesting like character stuff going on in that book. Especially with Glob. Like, Glob's like ongoing plot was like he had a crush on teenage Jean Grey and was like trying to impress her, and then like they went to the future, Glob and Anoli, and like they came back aged, like they're older now. And then that was completely forgotten when Guggenheim took over, because like Anoli's back to being like a little kid, which is kind of crazy. Like, I don't know how the editor can let that slip. But like, it seems like a lot of great character development just got swept under the rug, so that's disappointing. But those characters would probably be my underdogs that I like.
Really? Glob Herman is the one that you're fucking sticking to. The guy whose body is made of candle wax.
He was in Morrison's book, but like, he got interesting. And
well, yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. I feel like the default is to put him like he was in Morrison's book, where he's like a barely functional man-child. Mm-hmm. And is like kind of a like a sexist, bigoted idiot. Like,
he grew up. He grew up in Lemire's book. Check it out.
I mean, I would definitely check that out. That sounds interesting because I like Anoli. He was another cast member of the new X-Men. I think before, well, no, Northstar had already joined the team. Actually, yeah, because Northstar was like his mentor. And he was one of the only openly gay X-Men. So I guess it's just him, Northstar, and Bobby at this point. I think. I don't know. There might be more X-Men on the spectrum that I haven't.
That's really what comment space is for.
Yeah. Let us know what other X-Men are leading these.
I'm sure we've got a lot of stuff wrong in this podcast. We'll hear a lot.
Yeah. There's somebody pissed off because I said earlier that it was like two issues before Wolverine came back in that from like being junked into the sewer. I'm pretty sure now that I've thought about it that it's the same issue, but you know, still.
Dave,
I don't know.
Favorite? Oh yeah, yeah. I'm listening. I'm taking notes. So what I plan on doing is, I've listened to you all, and I have a few ideas of some of the stories I want to take a look at. And the next time the three of us are together, I'll give you guys a little bit of a book report and tell you which ones I read and which ones I like. And maybe I'll even like Cyclops a little bit more.
Well, there you go.
Probably after.
We're coming up on our hour anyway, so I think it's about time that we hop into at least Dave and I's favorite part of the show, which is Defend Your Poor Taste, where we ask our guests to talk about something that they might have a little bit of a guilty pleasure around, but they're not so guilty about. They like it, they're going to talk about it. Last time, Chris felt the need to let us know of his riveting interest in olives. Chris, I'm going to ask that this time it be something somehow related to the world of comics, movies.
No, I think last time I talked about Weezer.
Well, you started with the Olive Talk.
You got into a lot of poor taste that episode.
Well, right now someone's in the comment space like, no, Chris started with Weezer, then went to Olives.
Really? You think we have meticulous fans that are like correcting this? That would be neat. I don't think that that's
it's going to be me with an alter ego. Fall of Lover 29. What do you want, comics?
Or movies or games or something cake. Somehow related to the site.
What does the site do again? I'm trying to think.
Asian Airline.
I'm trying to think that when I was preparing for the show, I was like, okay, what movies have I been watching recently? What have I been reading? But that was like more of like, what are you into recently? So I completely forgot what the podcast.
That's the next section.
We can let them off the hook this week.
We're doing picks after this.
Poor taste. What do I like that's bad?
Lemon cream cake.
What don't you like that's bad?
Cyclops.
Well, yeah, it was funny. I was listening to, I've never heard that podcast before, How Did This Get Made? Which I listened to, I'm listening to the first time. And I was like, oh, I'm going to be sitting here for a while. Let me find an episode. And they had the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 was the movie they're talking about. Do you guys know this podcast?
I do know the podcast, yeah. So, I like that podcast, actually. It's pretty fun.
So it's like they just talk about like a really bad movie. And I'm listening to them this shit on this movie so much. And I thought, man, I thought we all loved Turtles 2. I mean, obviously, as we listen to them talk about it with like Vanilla Ice and everything, I'm like, this is a terrible movie. This is bad. But it was funny that I thought, no, I like that. And they're kind of shitting on the first Turtles 2. And they're like people that take the movie seriously. But no, Turtles 1 was a really good movie. So I don't know if that.
You got to think of the context here. Turtles 1 was a good movie about the Ninja Turtles. Like, we're not talking about Space Odyssey here.
I think I enjoyed Turtles 1 more than Space Odyssey, though.
Oh, I definitely did. I like Turtles 2. I enjoy Turtles 2. The only got bad after Turtles 3, Turtles in Time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was terrible. That was
Did you guys ever see the Coming Out of Our Shell tour special about them going on their live rock and roll / hip hop tour?
Yeah, I had the cassette.
I was going to say, you could buy the cassette from Burger King. How's that for trivia?
Where it was from, because I still remember. It probably was Pizza Hut, actually. Well, because they were a Pizza Hut company, right? Or a Pizza Hut property. They were they advertised Pizza Hut in the Ninja Turtles video game.
Yeah, they did.
I think that Kino in the second movie might be a Domino's guy, though. So I don't know.
Yeah, Kino sucks so much.
Kino was the guy who provided the voice for, I think, the second Raphael. No, not the second Raphael. He was in the costume for one of the characters.
Yeah. You know what? When I was at Rhode Island Comic Con, one of the guys there was the voice of Leonardo. No, I think it was the guy in the suit. And I was like, oh, wow. And I was like, wait, what would I talk to this guy about? Was it hot in that suit?
I had to look it up because I already got the X-Men arcade game horribly wrong. In 1990, Burger King had 4 VHS cartoons of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I do remember
that.
Half right.
I think I have those too, actually.
Wait, Dave, do you have the titles up by any chance?
I just got rid of them. I can pull them up.
Bring it back.
There was definitely one where there was a magician was the bad guy.
I think that's how good my turtle knowledge is, and I don't know if this is
poor taste. Like Michelangelo.
All right, I got him.
All right, so Dave, I'm gonna guess two. Ready?
All right.
Michelangelo the Magnificent.
No.
All right, that's Jason's. Sky Turtles.
Yes.
April Fools.
Yes. No. April. Hold on. April Foolish.
Oh. But let me. That's the April one is like a pink box, and the yes. Sky Turtles is a yellow box.
Correct.
Yes, what? That's my poor taste, guys. That's my defense. My memory.
And then there's a green box, Invasion of the Turtle Snatchers, and the blue box, The Great Boldini.
That's what it is. I was right about the episode, not the title.
So our poor taste is we've all been to Burger King on numerous occasions.
I love Burger King.
Burger King is a Miami company, and I'm from South Florida. Of course I patronize Burger King.
I do not.
305. Yeah, that fire.
What is your favorite fast food place, Dave?
I like Rally's.
Never heard of that.
It might be called Checkers.
I was going to say, that's just checkers, man.
Yeah, checkers. It's called sort of rallies like, here.
I don't get why they do that with that. And then there's like Carl's Jr.
and Hardee's.
And Hardee's are the same thing, too.
Yep.
Well, anyway.
More like Defender and Good Taste, right?
Unless we want to do our fast food picks, let's move on to our weekly picks where we talk about the comics we're reading, the movies we're watching, the TV shows we're watching, and the games we're playing. We'll start with you, Dave. What have you been reading? What have you been playing? What have you been watching?
Y'all are going to be impressed with me this week because I've been on vacation, so I've caught up on a lot of stuff. I caught up on all of Tom King's Batman run. And outside of the Bane arc, I've enjoyed it all. I'm enjoying the Catwoman story with the engagement and everything. So I was pretty proud of myself that I caught up on all that. Any of y'all reading that?
Yeah, I love it. I love the engaged Batman.
Yes, I'm not a modern Bat reader.
So then...
Thanks, Jason. Thanks for ruining.
Let's move along. I've actually watched some movies, too. I watched Kong Skull Island, and I watched... I think I mentioned this last week. I watched those horrible 80 films. I watched Wisdom, that was directed by Emilio Estevez, and then Ghoulies, which is a horrible 80s PG-13 horror film, and I was hoping I would like it, but no, it's garbage.
Wait, you mean Ghoulies?
Yes.
You said a soccer movie or is it a Halloween movie?
Yeah, you said Ghoulies. You said Ghoulies at first, man. I thought you were talking about like a movie about like a hockey goalie that like kills people or something.
Whatever.
Whatever, I saw it. That's all that matters.
Then I finally saw John Wick 2, and I watched The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah,
you watched a lot.
I did.
And you read an entire run of a comic book? Wow.
No, I was only like 15 books behind on that one. And then games, I've sort of boycotted PUBG until this update that came out yesterday makes it better. So I will download that this week and see if it's more playable than what it is.
Yeah, you got like seriously irate at PUBG in general for some reason.
Well, I mean, I'm in the top 10, and I'm getting ready to take somebody out from behind, and I get kicked to the dashboard. I mean, that's bullshit. And then, if I'm lucky enough to come back, the circle's already closing in on me, and I have to take off running. So, apparently the patch they put out yesterday fixes a lot of the crashes, so we'll see. But, yeah, it really pissed me off last week, so... to the point where I actually uninstalled it. So I have to reinstall it and try the patch and see if it's any better. So that's
been I'm just happy week. That I hear you talking about this game every week on the show, and now like I know everything about it. So like when you talk about like the circle and like taking someone out, I'm like, yeah, I understand this. This makes sense to me.
You should play it. That and Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's your homework, Chris.
We all got homework after the show, so Dave's got the most.
I got a lot.
What is a maggot? Throw out my Oakleys.
What are the name of maggots to maggots?
You need me.
There you go. Chris, what's your picks for this week?
We're recording this on Tuesday night, so I'm actually in between reviews for tomorrow morning, Wednesday, when you all be listening to this podcast. So I've got to review X-Men Blue 19 after this, which features a major twist. So get ready, X-Fans. And then Phoenix Resurrection number 3. I already reviewed that one. And so we're getting closer to the finish line, how Jean Grey came back. That's a really good series. It's by Matthew Rosenberg. And I don't know if you've read his Punisher stuff, Dave, but maybe you're familiar with them. But he's writing that War Machine Punisher arc right now.
I've read the first one. I need to catch up on the other ones. I like Rosenberg. I like his work. I really like what he did with the Rocket Raccoon little mini last year. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of Punisher donning the War Machine armor. So as much as it pains me that I haven't jumped right in to read all this, but I'll get to it eventually.
Yeah, this is my first time reading his work, and I'm impressed with his X-Men knowledge. And I think I've said in my first review, I said he should take over X-Men Gold. So that would be great for Jason if that happened.
Yeah.
But, fantastic. But yeah, he's great. I'm trying to think. And then movies, this is going to sound really pretentious with the cake thing in the beginning of the show. But the last movie I watched was The Young Girls of Rochefort or Rofort. I don't know. It's a French movie from, I think, the 60s. By Jacques Demy, and it's a French musical. So I've wanted to watch this for a long time. I was a big fan of La La Land. I know a lot of people shit on La La Land, but
I liked it.
White people save jazz. Yeah, what's not to like?
So one of the movies that I had seen in college when I went through like a French New Wave phase was the Umbrellas of Cherbourg, which is a musical which heavily influenced La La Land. So I remember seeing Umbrellas in college, and I was like, man, I want to make a movie like this that's like a musical and like really colorful. And then this guy, Damien Chazelle, did that with La La Land. So I'm like, well, I can't hate this movie because he did what I used to fantasize about doing. So
dude, that's not how hate works. You can hate whatever you want. If it's bad, you can dislike it.
Well, then that's going to be like Cyclops is hating on people. Jealous dude. But yeah, so I love La La Land. I love that movie. And so I wanted to see some of Jacques Demy's other films. So I finally got around to watching The Young Girls of Rochefort. And it was an interesting movie. And right now it's a Netflix disc. So I got to watch the extras and then I can send it back. But that's my most recent viewing. And I'm sure, again, the commenters will correct me if my French pronunciation's off. So
wait. Did I know that you still get discs from Netflix?
You know, that's something people give me shit for. Is that like...
Yeah, you don't, I was about to give you shit for that.
What the hell are you doing? I was going to let it slide. I was really going to let it go.
You see a rotary phone too, Chris? Do you have a landline?
Not just defend my poor taste, defend my life decisions. no, because look, because I can't get The Young Girls of Rochefort on streaming. So right there, I just proved everyone out there who was going to hate on me in the comment space wrong. Get me Young Girls of Rock, because that sounds weird.
Yeah, so you
stop playing. Get me those Young Girls of Rockaport. No, yeah. You can't get everything on streaming. I mean, I can't live life like people who just stream, because it's like, yeah, they get to see Stranger Things and all that stuff, but you don't get to see the movies right away. So I guess the argument is Redbox, but I'm not going to do two things. Stupid.
Also, you can watch The Young Girls of Rochefort on Amazon and Vudu and iTunes. It's available in all three of them for streaming.
Do I have to pay for those?
You have to pay for Netflix.
Yeah, I know, but I just want one service.
I think if you're a Prime member, that you might be able to see it for free. I don't know.
That's another thing I don't have, Amazon Prime, which everyone apparently has.
I'm going to start an Amazon Prime account pretty soon. I've avoided it for too long now. I'm at the point where I'm buying stuff off Amazon enough that like it makes sense.
Well, I just got MoviePass, so I'm waiting for my card to come. I'm very excited about that. So that's one thing that I'm up on, the hip new things. So I'm not completely out of date.
I'm curious to see what you think of that, because I'm on the fence still if I'm going to give it a try or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like award season, so there's a lot of stuff I want to see. And I'm thinking like this will be my way to see it all, you know.
See, I don't get that. Because people want to give it an award does not make me want to see a movie. That being said, on Friday I am going to see The Shape of Water, which I'm pretty excited for. That looks really good. But most of the award season movies, I don't give a rat's ass about.
Well, I mean, those movies I watch them when they come on Netflix or when I get the discs a year later. But they're not stuff I'd rush out to see. I pretty much only go to see superhero movies and big event movies like Star Wars, or if there's some indie that looks interesting. But I'm never gonna go see The Post, you know, on my own. I'll watch it on Netflix. But if I have MoviePass now, if it's $9 for unlimited movies, on a Sunday I'll go see The Post, or I'll go see, you know, I, Tonya one night or something. Yeah, so
see, I would see I, Tonya in a theater. I don't think that's been an option for me. That looks really good. And I've heard good things about Margot Robbie and who's the mother? Is that Allison Janney?
Yeah.
Yeah, she just won the Golden Globe for Best Supporting Actress.
And the Winter Soldier is her boyfriend, I think.
Sebastian Stan? I don't know anything about that guy.
I'm on his Instagram at Rhode Island Comic Con. He took a huge selfie, and I'm in it.
can you actually see your face, or yes, am I going to be like judging by like you, that's my phone case, you guys. I know it's black, but it's my phone case.
You can see my glasses on my head, and I put it on Facebook and circled my head, and it got like one like, and so I took it down.
He has his eyes closed and his mouth half open with an olive going towards him.
The cake on a toothpick.
With the caption,
No, he's a cool guy. He seems like a nice guy.
Yeah. As for my picks, today, actually, at work, so at my new office, we have some TV monitors that will sometimes display, you know, actual pertinent information to our day-to-day, or like if there's a big event in our sphere, it'll run there. But other times, it's just connected to someone's, like, Hulu or Netflix account. And today we watched Three Ninjas at work, and man, I kind of forgot about that movie's quality. It's good. I enjoyed Three Ninjas for what it was. I don't know that a lot of people are gonna enjoy the fact that like Rocky, Tum Tum, and Colt were played by different people in pretty much every one of those movies. That Hulk Hogan saved them, pre-racism / sex scandal. let's see. There was another one that was called Three Ninjas Kickback, where I think it might have had the same kid playing Colt, but both his brothers were different. The Tum Tums in particular were always different because that kid was shit actor, and they could never actually get a good actor to play him. But yeah, I'm waiting for the gritty reboot of Three Ninjas, or like maybe Three Ninjas versus Surf Ninjas. I think there were technically three of them, if you count Rob Schneider. So that's the dream for a 90s kid. As far as reading, I'm working my way very slowly through a series of trades. I'm about to start Brand New Day, the most popular Spider-Man story of all time. Most well-loved and well-regarded. No one was ever upset about what happened as a result of Brand New Day.
Are you talking about One More Day or Brand New Day?
Which one?
One More Day is when they wipe out the marriage. Brand New Day is when he has his new life.
I think that's
single. And
yeah. It's long as shit, I'll tell you that.
It's a long-ass day.
Yeah, it's a long-ass day.
Dan Slott's long-ass day.
That sounds like a cartoon short that would start before a Pixar movie.
And everyone will be furious about it and scream about it on the internet.
Let's see. Other than that, playing. I am a PlayStation Plus member, I get discounts on games that I should have played like 2 years ago. So I just started Uncharted 4. It's awesome. I'm really a big fan of it. But I've played through all of the other Uncharted games, so I shouldn't have waited this long because I kind of wanted to see. I don't know how it ends yet. I've managed to avoid spoilers, and in order to keep it that way, I figured I better just knock the thing out. But also because I'm a PlayStation Plus member, for free, I have now the Telltale Batman game, which is supposed to be really cool. And I'm going to run through that thing probably pretty quickly once I finish Uncharted.
So you're not a Batman comic guy, but you're a Batman game guy.
Yeah, the Batman games for the last couple of years, at least, have been amazing. The Arkham series was really good, with the possible exception of Origins. But even that one, compared to other video games based off superheroes, is like in the top tier. I don't know, Dave, did you ever play the Arkham games?
I played the first one, and I own the other ones. Like I said, I'm a multiplayer guy, so... Unless my internet's out, I'm not going to play a single player game, which is unfortunate because I know I'm missing out on a lot. But I'm trying to catch up to them. Like I said, I own them. But
so you like loner comics, but team games?
I don't know, man. I like shooting people in the face.
See, there. I believe that there That's is a outlet. Multiplayer. In Arkham Knight, the most recent Batman Rocksteady game, I think that you can do multiplayer and have one player play as either Catwoman or Nightwing or Robin.
So it's like more of like a co-op.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably more closely a co-op. And I think you can only do like the VR missions where you have to like beat up a room of like 60 guys or like there's like a death trap that you both have to help each other escape, sort of thing.
Right.
I think that that's how that typically operates.
You know what, Jason? You mentioned trades you're reading, and that's probably my poor taste choice, was that I read Secret Empire, the hardcover, last week, and I enjoyed it. It was fine. And I think that's the best way to experience that book, reading it months after the controversies died down, and you just get to read the story that the creators intended you to read. So I enjoyed it.
But you think that that was the story that the creators intended, that it didn't end up getting changed by committee after all of the blowback?
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, there's so many weird things in there with, like, Cap. The other Cap is, like, an idea and the dream world or whatever, and, like, I can't see them, like, rushing all that. I think what the changes were, like, how Marvel marketed it. Like, when they put out that statement, like, please be patient with us.
But, I enjoyed the story, too, so... And you know, Nick Spencer isn't even on Twitter anymore.
Yeah, yeah. It's sad. Yeah, so shame on you. Shame on you, fans. I'm glad I get to say that.
Yeah. Well, good. That's a good way to end the show with Chris shaming fans.
I'm going to eat with my toothpick now and go watch a French film.
Listen, nerds. Me and my olives are going to go watch a Woody Allen movie.
Going to put on some Weezer.
Jeez.
The people that associate with Italian.
I want to take a moment to thank our fans for getting this.
It's now went from fans to fans. So hi, Mom.
Yeah. Hey, Nikki, thanks for getting this far into the podcast. Also, the man from the ivory tower is Chris Asan, the editor at large, I guess is what he would prefer to be known as. Little Lord Fauntleroy, if our fans want to get a hold of you on Twitter and send you like hate mail or anything like that, how can they get in touch with you?
That'd be some new followers. That'd be exciting. You can find me on Twitter at Chris A. Hassan at whatever the thing is, twitter.com. I don't know.
It's not an email address, dude. It's just... Yeah.
you'll figure out what it is tonight when I don't add the links.
Dave, is always a pleasure for you, not shitting on our audience.
No, I'm calling out the fans who got upset about Secret Empire.
I'm back next week, so...
Yeah. Dave, how can our fans find you?
You can find me on Twitter, at Psychotic, and it's S-Y-C-O-T-I-C.
And I am Jason. I'm the one who's been thanking you this whole time. Please don't spam on Twitter. You can find me online at Felix Lancaster on Twitter, Instagram. I'm more active. And other than that, I want to thank everybody for listening and for Chris for being here to remind us why we don't have him on every week. And thank you for listening to the Adventures in Pod Taste AIPT Comics Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Good night, Japan.
Good night, Japan.
That's my line.
He's stealing his bit, jerk.
God damn. Last show for you.
Can we leave this Japan? Shut up.
Good night, Japan.